The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Welcome to those who came in during the meditation. Are there any comments or questions from my instructions during the meditation, or anything anyone wants to share about what you noticed? Yeah, great. Dove. Here's a microphone we're recording, so it's helpful.
So you push that little button down until the light turns green.
Whoops.
Hey.
Hey.
Thank you. I found myself thinking about the need to let go of thinking a lot during the meditation, to the point that when I didn't do that and I wasn't thinking, I had this sort of losing the track moment where I was afraid of almost just like completely like losing consciousness, like falling asleep. I needed to be thinking about not thinking in order to like stay, I don't know, meditating.
Yeah. I think we're really afraid of being just simple and not orienting through our thinking, that fear can come up. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Do you feel like you need any? I saw Lauren nod her head. I don't know if you had the similar experience, but do you need anything that would be helpful for you for that experience? Or do you feel okay recognizing that that was going on?
Yeah, I felt like I was walking a line, you know, that it would start here and then it might cross into something else and come back. So it was worth exploring.
It was worth exploring. Nice. Thank you for sharing, Dove. Great, Jill Bear.
Yeah. I had a new visualization, I'm going to add to the repertoire, of like a tree, but just the trunk, and then our thoughts are the tree kind of making new branches. And so I was trying to visualize pruning branches to keep the tree just as a trunk, basically.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's, how do we stay close? I like that, you know. How do we stay close to the core of things, you know, and not get so pulled out, so drawn out, so far away? This is kind of, I don't know if this will make sense exactly, but hopefully it will by the end of my talking. But so there's this lifeguard where I swim, and his name is Leon, and I have a hard time remembering names. It takes me a while to remember people's names. And so one day I was, you know, sort of like, what's your name again? And he said, it's Leon, like the musician. And I still don't know what musician he means. No idea. And so I often will be like, oh, Levy, you know, like Lee, what musician do I know that has a name that starts with, you know, an L? And and yet I think about how he was so like, you know, that musician, you know, and he's got such a strong story around his name, right? That makes his name so clear to him, right? And it's part of his identity, really. He identifies through this musician because this is part of his interest or his story or you know, his network of associations. But I don't share that network of associations, right? And so this is a small example of how there's the person, right? So this is maybe the trunk, just this being, this body, this like human being with an identity. And then there's all the ways that that gets filled out with branches and leaves and flowers and, you know, all the story that goes with the name Leon, right? And yeah, so, you know, it's great, right? We're beautiful trees. But we can sure get lost in the weeds of it all, right? And lose sort of touch with something that's so maybe more pure essence, or the simplicity of just being a human, you know, just being a human, having an experience that's constantly changing and shifting, unreliable. So maybe I'll tell you about a sutta, because this gets into this idea too. And I kind of enjoy this sutta. It's a fun one. It's called Clinging to Views. And the story starts out that, you know, a description how there's all these people who are wanderers and spiritual practices and various sects living around this area. And they all have various beliefs and opinions. And there was a lot of debate at the time of the Buddha. It was a big part of the society. And then, so they were described as quarrelsome, disputations, wrangling, you know, wounding each other with verbal darts, saying the Dharma is like this, the Dharma is not like that, the Dhamma is like this, the Dhamma is like that, right? So they just, you can imagine, right, people arguing and telling their way of seeing and, you know, competing with each other. And somehow the Buddha, some of the Buddha's followers went to the Buddha and told him what was happening. And, you know, the Buddha then tells a story. And he says, you know, oh, formerly, bhikkhus, there was a certain king in this very area. And that king addressed a man, come now, my good man, bring together all those people in Savatthi who have been blind from birth. And so the man said, yes, your majesty. And, you know, went around and found people who had been blind from birth and brought them together. And then the king says, now, my man, show the blind people an elephant. Very well, your majesty, the man replied to the king. And he presented an elephant to the blind people, saying, this, blind people, is an elephant. And to some of the blind people, he presented the head of the elephant, saying, this is an elephant. To some, he presented the ear of an elephant, saying, this is an elephant. To some, he presented a tusk, the trunk, the body, the foot, the hindquarters, the tail, and the tuft at the end of the tail, saying, this is an elephant. And so, thus, then, the man, having shown the elephant to the blind people, he went to the king and said, okay, king, the blind people have been shown the elephant. Your majesty, do now what you think is suitable. And so the king approached those blind people and said, have you been shown the elephant? And they say, yes, your majesty, we have been shown an elephant. And he says, tell me, people, what is an elephant like? So the people who had been shown the head of the elephant replied, an elephant, your majesty, is just like a water jar. Those that had been shown the ear, an elephant, your majesty, is just like a winnowing basket. Those who had been shown the trunk, the tusk, I mean, an elephant, your majesty, is just like a plowshare. The one shown a trunk, it's just like a plow pole. The one shown the body, just like a storeroom. The one showed a foot, a post. The one showed hindquarters, just like a mortar. The one shown a tail, pestle. And the one showed the tuft at the end of the tail replied, "An elephant, your majesty, is just like a broom." So saying an elephant's like this and an elephant is not like that, an elephant not like this and it's not like that, they fought with each other with their fists. And the king was delighted at the spectacle. Even so, bhikkhus, are those wanderers of various sects, right? They are the same, arguing about what's true dharma, what's not dharma, what a name means, what a name doesn't mean, right? And on realizing the significance of this, the Lord uttered on this occasion this inspired utterance, "Some recluses and Brahmins, so-called, are deeply attached to their own views. People who only see one side of things engage in quarrels and disputes." Right? So much of how much of our life is that we're all touching different parts of the elephant. We're all having a different experience of the elephant. And we all think our experience is the experience. How much are we missing, right? And how much are we assuming? So I'm going to read this poem again, but I'm going to read the whole thing that I started with. Some of you didn't hear it earlier. But, you know, this is these... Before I read the poem, I guess I should say a couple more things. So we create our identities in these ways, right? We get identified with our right story, our right way, our way of knowing something. And we can hold really fast to those things, and we can confine ourselves. We can limit ourselves by our beliefs. And we can even not have an accurate perception even of who we are, be twisting ourselves up inside in a way. So there's a lot that happens with our views, with our thoughts, when it becomes papancha, the spreading out, this web, this networking. There's a lot that we create and a lot that we lose. We lose touch with the trunk, with the core of things. So here's this poem by Rosemary Traumer. "When the story of self slips off like a mask, the sky is more sky, and an apple more apple, and the self less self, and more what a wind is. How easy to love when I'm naked. And how is it that always some new story arrives, solidifies less like a cast, more like a straight jacket? I notice because life starts to fit too tight. I notice because I start to think I'm right. But it's no failure when a story appears, just an invitation to notice how it feels to be dressed in a story. An invitation to pray to the mystery, please once again undress me. An invitation to be grateful for the hands that loosen the story and free me. An invitation to let the self remember this, how it longs to be spacious, to be as infinite as what is." I'm going to read one more little quote. In the meditation, I talked about a sky, and I talked about a thought being like a cloud in the sky. And I suggested opening up around the cloud, letting the cloud be the cloud, and creating more view, more space around the cloud, around the thought. We don't notice the space between things. We notice the things, but there's so much space. So here's a quote from the Dhammapada. There are no footprints in the sky. I love that. There are no footprints in the sky. You won't find the sage out there. The world delights in conceptual proliferation. Papancha. Buddhas delight in the ending of that, which is called nipapancha. Take that word in. Nipapancha. So maybe I'll say one more thing. Here we go. I thought it was one more. Now it's one more. One more, one more. Because I think this, well, I'll just say it. So in the Sakkapana Sutta of the Digha Nikaya, Sakka tells the Buddha that all people wish to live without hate, harming, hostility, malignity, and in peace, right? So this is one of the Buddha's disciples, and he's saying, everybody wants to live in this way of feeling good and free and peaceful, right? And then he says, in spite of this, they actually live in hate, harming one another, hostile and malign. And Sakka asks, why is this so? Why is this so? And this launches a discourse in which the Buddha traces the cause of conflict and hostility to bonds of jealousy, so, you know, avarice, likes and dislikes, what we want, what we don't want, what we're clinging to, desire, and then papancha, all of the stories, views, opinions we have about what we want and don't want. So there's this craving comes from a hunger. We want something or we don't want something. Right? And this creates, you know, this greed, hatred, and delusion. Connecting it with things creates this endless papancha when we are not careful. When we are not careful, even though we want peace and ease. When the mind is not observed, when we are not tracking what is driving our thinking and our believing and our viewing and our creating, we get carried into suffering and spread suffering. So, what needs more clarity? What needs more comment about what I've shared here? Anything unclear? Or what have your hearts and minds been inspired by hearing this? What can you add to this Dharma to help all of us let it sink in? You know, please share your voices. We have a mic there, and there's another mic somewhere else. Dove's got it. Anybody willing to speak? Ah, Nicole is. Yay. Hi, Nicole. It's good to see you. Missed you, too. Is it on? Push and hold.
Miss you all. I was on a trip to Singapore to visit my daughter, who has a little baby. So I really enjoyed it. But then today I was coming here. I said, I'm going to go there no matter how late or how much traffic is. So it's good to be here to hear this. All you just said is just music to my ears after 3 weeks of being away. What I would add is that how much we can be aware of the stories we make up in our mind, and above that, how attached we are.
Yeah.
How much We live our life on these stories that I think then in meditation, and by observing my thought, I feel like how attached I am. And what are these stories coming from? I mean, I know it's from coming the database of past and from sitting in my subconscious, but why am I letting it to run me?
Yeah.
So I think the metaphor of cloud and sky was beautiful. That I'm going to use.
Great.
I'm going to use. And the space that is available to us. And we are so, I am so incapable of being aware of that space. It's like we are locked into, we are so obsessed with all these stories. And it's just meditation and observing all these and then bring what you just said, all of them, to the mind to improve our consciousness, not by all this nonsense. Thank you for your talk.
Thank you, Nicole, for bringing your voice and adding your perspective, your thoughts, your response. Thank you. Anyone else want to add anything? Thank you, Lauren, and then Tracy.
The piece that was brought into the circle around fear is something that I've really been processing since then. I think I notice a pattern in myself where I cling really hard to a fixed sense of my identity because it provides comfort.
Yeah.
And I think there's predictability in it. And that hindrance of self-doubt comes in of, well, if I wasn't my thoughts, if I wasn't so fixed and defined, could I be with what I discover?
Mm.
You know, and it feels like an abyss moment where you go, no, wait, I'm the same. I'm going to go back. So just really appreciate bringing in and being able to touch on how scary it can feel to even loosen the grip a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Lauren. Tracy.
So I'm always stuck on the water thing, Tanya. When I sit down to meditate, my first thing is, how's your water? How's the water looking?
Yeah. And so you meaning that, like the jar?
Yes.
And how, so I'll just say for people who haven't heard it, so they're, you know, our consciousness is, our mind is a lot about, like, if you took a jar and you went to a river and you scooped up mud and water and you put the lid on it, and it's like shaken up, right? It's all, the mud is all throughout the water. And the idea with mindfulness is, in this practice, is we set it down. We set it down, and what happens? The mud, the debris settles, and the water becomes clear. Water becomes clear. So, Tracy, I think what you're saying is when you start to sit, the first thing you're noticing is what's the clarity in the mind?
I'm trying to figure out, you know, I'm trying to still my water is what I tell myself in my mind. It's normally when I first sit down, I'm, you know, kind of scatterbrained and the water is moving around and muddy and everything. And so as I meditate, I try and still the water, make it clear, make it beautiful. And then when I have a thought, it's like a rock is thrown into the water. It gets all stirred up and it kind of just, you know, spreads out like you were saying.
Yeah.
And so then you have to start all over. You have to say, okay, well, there's that rock. And then still the water again, over and over again. That's what I find myself doing.
Yeah, that's a beautiful description. And what I'm, you know, hoping I'm hearing is that as we get more and more wise, I mean, we don't, you know, thoughts are generated. They're not mine. The mind is doing this, right? And so as we get more still, meaning we're not reacting. We don't need to pick the jar up and shake it and turn it and look and like, you know, right? We just, okay, the thought came, it came in. Maybe it's a big, or maybe it's a small one. And if we can just observe, look at the, wow, look at that, and just let it happen, it will naturally settle. Now, if we add suffering, we're going to be like, oh my God, look what you did, and what, I'm so stupid, and blah, 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 right? We just add, and it just gets it more and more stirred up. So it sounds to me like you're really doing a beautiful job of just letting the process happen without adding suffering.
I'm trying.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So shall we move into small groups now? Would that be nice? Great. So let's see. I didn't. Did you count by any chance? So the first thing I'd like you to do is I'd like you to talk about the color orange. And I'd like you to each share, like, I'll give you 1 minute per person. I'll ring the bell every minute. And I want you to just share your associations with the color orange. Okay? All right. Please begin. Oh, yeah. Who's going to begin? Longest hair. All right. I'm going to get my timer out.